bringing it home with Sarah and Tennille. Sarah, here we are another week.
We finally made it to fall break for my kids.
You're excited about that, aren't you?
Yes.
Well, I tell you, we are celebrating something or observing something this week that's pretty important.
It's actually Fire Prevention Awareness Week, and it actually started yesterday. So it's the 8th through the 14th of
Okay.
October.
So we need to get going on this. So what's it all about?
Well, I honestly didn't even know this was a thing until you brought it to my attention. But it is a week that the National Fire Prevention Association sponsors to help people be more aware of what they can do to prevent fires and what to do if a fire occurs. And there's actually like some history connected to this that you told me about.
You know, I kind of dove into this, and I'm going to recommend that all of our listeners Google this. But the Great Chicago Fire. Now, this happened back in 1871 on October the 8th. So, like yesterday was the anniversary of this happening. But it was a devastating, I mean, like horrific event that happened in Chicago. But Google it, but it actually is the reason why we observe Fire Prevention Awareness Week today, correct?
That's right. A lot of people lost their lives, and it really changed the way that cities and towns began to build, not just structures, but roads and things too. So it is interesting for sure. And it's also this week is the longest running public health observance in our country. So that's pretty interesting.
Well, and this year they're focusing on cooking safety. And, you know, we love to cook. We talk about food a lot. So this is a great time to think about this. And the slogan is cooking safety starts with you. How about that?
Right. And honestly, I know you like statistics. I had to look one up. According to the National Fire Prevention Association, cooking is the leading cause of home fires, with nearly half of all home fires involving some type of cooking equipment.
And you know, I guess that's understandable because you know there are so many appliances and things that we use while cooking. So this is kind of concerning. And I think we need to get some of the questions answered to kind of keep us a little bit safer while we cook.
Well, I think you're right. And we brought in a special guest today because we do not have all fire related answers.
We have no fire related answers.
So, we have asked actually one of my family members, my brother-in-law, Jeremy Channel, is with us today. He is the assistant fire chief with the Covington Fire Department here in Covington, Tennessee. So, welcome, Jeremy.
Thanks, Sarah. Thanks, Tennille. Glad to be here.
Well, I mean, Sarah, you don't need this education. If a fire happens, you just call your brother-in-law.
He would probably be like, "Why did you call me? Call not."
Know, right? Well, after this education, he's going to say, you should know what to do. So, Jeremy, I guess my first question is, you know, some people have gas stoves, some have electric stoves. Is there one or the other that's more likely to cause a kitchen fire?
Tennille, great question. Not really. It's all about what you do with that appliance, right? It's all in how you use it and how you understand how to use it. Obviously, with a gas stove, there's an open flame. So that's obviously a concern. With an electric stove, you have an induction top. So burns children in particular or even us adults, we forget that that thing's hot. A lot of times we'll put our hand up there after we think it's not hot, and it still is. But really it's no one over the other. They're both can be good, and they both have some downsides to them.
And I'll tell you, the open flame part, I guess that's what kind of makes people think, Sarah, that a gas stove would probably be more dangerous. But I'm hearing that they're about the same. It's what you do.
Right, just being careful and like Jeremy said, knowing how to use your stove right correctly.
Yeah.
So another question along these lines, Jeremy, what if we're cooking and a pan on the stovetop catches fire? What's our response? Does it matter if it's gas or electric, or is the response the same?
The response is we start screaming. Fine, but we don't need to do that. We need to like take some kind of action, I'm guessing, right, Jeremy?
That's right. So the biggest thing is to stay calm, right? So regardless of what type of stove you have, if you're able to, turn it off, turn the knob off, and then cover it, right? So if you have an open pan, take a pan top and just cover it, right? So why do we do that? We want to take the oxygen away, right? Or to put itself out. But if it's beyond your control, and you can't do that, you have a home fire extinguisher, use that fire extinguisher. If that's not an option for you, then obviously get out of the house, get out of the structure, and call your fire department. Call 911.
Wow. Okay. Because, I mean, you know, you're going to panic in that moment, but you're saying stay calm. And if we know what to do, you know, cover it. So we cover it, whether it's a gas stove or an electric stove. Is that correct?
So if it's an electric stove, obviously cover the pan.
Yeah.
And if you can, turn the eye off, mm-hmm. Turn the knob off. And a gas stove, you're wanting to shut off the gas. So if you can turn the knob on the gas to shut the gas off, then cover it with a metal. We have even seen people pour baking soda, things of that nature, into a pan to get it off. So what really causes the fire is going to be what's in that pan, whether the pan has boiled all the water out, or whatever the liquid is in the pan, or whatever the food item is in the pan, right? And that caused just the heat, or it could be splattering of grease, right? Yeah. Or cooking oils, which would go onto the wall or maybe the cabinets above, and that's where the fire gets bigger. So it just depends on where you're at and which stage of what you've got going on as to how to cover that.
Jeremy, what do we do if the inside of the oven catches fire?
Okay, so inside of the oven, same thing. Turn it off. Turn it off. Leave that door closed, right? Because it's compartmentalized. It's not really going to spread. And then call your fire department. So hopefully by the time those guys get there, it's out.
Oh, close it. Okay.
It's just like a bedroom door. Keep your doors closed, right?
Okay.
True. So don't open it and investigate.
Keep it closed. We want it compartmentalized.
Open it and start looking in there thinking, what happened?
Right. And Tennille, you're right. It goes back to that panic mode that, you know, my cake is burnt. I've left it in here way too long. Well, then you've given it oxygen. So you've made it produce that flame again. And then, you know, it could get larger. But if you close that off, you're cutting that supply of oxygen off to it, and it'll essentially starve itself out, if that makes sense.
It does. It makes perfect sense. So let's jump outside to some outdoor cooking. You know, Jeremy, we like to grill. So what are some safety precautions we need to prevent, you know, a big fire when we're grilling?
And so the first thing, I think in our area, we see a lot of people will have their grills under a carport, or they'll be on a deck, or they'll be out underneath a like a second floor awning or something. A lot of places, apartment complexes especially, to get the grill out, get it away from, get about 5 feet, 3 to 5 feet away from a building where that just contact or exposure is not there, so you don't have to worry about the building catching on fire, right? If something were to happen, whether it be a gas grill or wood-fired or charcoal-fired grill, whatever it may be, the biggest thing is getting that grill away from a structure itself.
Well, that makes sense, because if it does, you know, your grill does produce more fire than you won't catch
it. And that's right. And then for your listeners that do live in apartment complexes, you'll probably find that is a rule of the apartment complex on your balconies. No grills allowed. So just check with your residents and see what the rules are.
Yeah, that's a good tip. Yeah, mm-hmm. Keep us safe while we're grilling. So, okay, Thanksgiving is not too far off, Jeremy. And I'm going to confess this. I have never tasted fried turkey before, but I think
you're missing out. It is so
good. I've never had it, but I know a lot of people deep fry their turkeys in their backyards. So I want to know, what types of things do people need to consider if that's something that they're planning to do in November?
Right. So you're right, Tenille. That seems to be maybe a call we receive pretty annually. The biggest thing is they're putting the oil on top of a burner, right? On top of a gas burner, and it's at a high rate. So the biggest thing is they'll boil over. And when that flammable liquid boils over and hits that open flame, then we've pretty much got a rolling and going fire. And it's connect to a LPG tank. So the biggest thing that we could tell you on the front end is two things, really. Make sure that turkey is thawed out and make sure you've dried it off before you put it into that oil. And then the second thing is, make sure that your oil is not over the level where it will spill over. And I guess thirdly is really make sure it goes back to just like your cooking grills. Make sure that's off of, make sure it's not on a wood deck. Make sure it's not right, you know, make sure it's a couple feet away from a building. So you're kind of out in the open with that. And then we'd recommend that when you do place the turkey into that bath of hot oil, that you turn the burner off. And if it were to spill over, you wouldn't have that open flame for that large fire to start.
I just don't think we're going to try this at home, Jeremy. I'm going to be honest.
it is worth the reward if you do it properly. And if you just take those couple steps that we just talked about, you really do have a good product.
Okay, I may have to try it, but Sarah, you're concerned about some of the stuff inside, aren't you?
Well, you know, we talk on our Kitchen Divas show a lot about kitchen appliances, you know. And if you know me, you know that I love my air fryer and my slow cooker and all that stuff. So, Jeremy, let's talk about those types of things in the kitchen. You know, all the handy gadgets and appliances we have. Do you have suggestions for that? And, I mean, what do y'all see the most of related to fires, related to kitchen appliances?
So a kitchen appliances, what we've seen, primarily two things stick out. The first one is your toaster. Your toaster can get very, very hot. And make sure you clean the inside of your toaster. It's usually a little tray at the bottom that you can pull out to clean out. but the biggest thing we see there is malfunctioning, overheating of the coils. So when your toaster is not being used, unplug it. Don't immediately place it back into the cupboard or cabinets. Leave it out. Let it cool down. It's kind of like your iron, right, that you iron your clothes with. Same kind of thing. You want to give it some space where it can cool down. So that's really the first thing that sticks out is the toaster. And then the second thing is your coffee pot, believe it or not, is probably the second thing in my head that shows up a lot with kitchen appliances that we've had issues with. And it's kind of the same thing. The heating element, it has the potential to malfunction and cause an issue there. So the same thing, if it's not in use, unplug it, let it cool down, use it for when you need it, and then turn it off.
Well, you just named the two things I use every single day.
And you probably use them at the same time.
Literally.
So, you know, they do draw a lot of electricity. So there's always that.
I guess the rule would be the same too with like air fryer, you know, an electric skillet, like griddles, just only plug them in when they're in use and then let them cool down before you store them.
Absolutely right. Absolutely right.
Well, that we can do.
Yeah, we can do those things. So I'm going to go back to something you mentioned earlier, Jeremy. You talked about using a fire extinguisher to put out those fires. So I kind of went to some of the home improvement stores, their websites, and some of the big box stores. And, you know, when I sort from price low to price high. So I just want to know, the cheaper fire extinguishers, are they okay for our homes, or do we need to shell out more cash and get like a mid-grade, or does it really matter?
any preparation is worth it. they're okay. You just got to remember what you're looking for, what you need, I guess is a way to say that. So in a house, we recommend what we call the ABC extinguishers. Each letter represents a different property that particular chem or that particular extinguisher would cover. Going back to that, we were talking about the cooking fires earlier on the stovetop. So if I had cooking oil, if I had vegetable oil, and I'm wanting to fry French fries on top of my stove, well, I wouldn't put water in that because water reacts with that oil and it creates a bigger fire. So I would want like a dry chemical type extinguisher for that to be able to put that out. So those are the type of things that you'd be looking for when you go into these, like you said, the big box stores or the stores in your area to find those type things. The best advice is make that stop by your local fire station and ask those guys. Tell them to come out to your house. We still make house calls. Tell them to come out to your house and say, hey, this is what I've got. Would you help me find a fire extinguisher? Or a lot of times we come out to houses and people want smoke alarms put in their house, which is a program that probably your local fire departments participate in. So they have free smoke alarms. So contact your local fire departments. But those firemen can come out and take a look around and recommend, hey, you might want to get this type extinguisher of this type size based on how big your house is or what type of appliances you have or those type things. So always reach out to your local firemen. That's what we're here for.
So you're saying don't grab the cheap one and think you're covered?
Not necessarily. It just depends. It just depends on what you've got.
Okay.
Well, and I didn't know the fire department would come out here and do that stuff. That's good to know.
Yes.
So after we buy this fire extinguisher, Jeremy, what kind of attention do we need to pay to it? You know, just does it live forever under the counter? I mean, what do we need to do?
No, they do not live forever. Based on what they are, there's some that are aerosol, which means they're kind of like a spray paint can, right? The small things that you've seen. In some of these stores Tennille was just talking about, or it could be all the way up to 20-pound cylinder that's got pressure in it. Those are they have life dates on them just like anything else does. So yeah, you want to look at those preferably twice a year, kind of like you do with your smoke alarms. But yeah, they have a date on them.
Okay, so just pay attention to that at our purchase and make that part of what we check on each year. I like that. You talked about smoke alarms just now. Like, remind our listeners the importance of them and checking them. And I think Tennille has a question about them specifically.
Okay. Yeah, I do, because I don't know if this is a rumor or if it's the truth, but I have heard that you don't need to put a smoke alarm in your kitchen area, because it'll be set off easily. You know, when you're cooking and things, smoke comes and sets it off and you get desensitized to the sound. And so if there's actually a real emergency, you may not respond to that sound. So you shouldn't put a smoke alarm in the kitchen. You should put it farther away, like near a bedroom or somewhere else. Please clarify, do we need a smoke alarm in the kitchen?
Tennille, great question. You're absolutely correct. Smoke alarms do not need to be placed in the kitchen. And a secondary place that they do not need to be placed is outside of a bathroom. Two separate reasons. The kitchen, so this year's National Fire Protection Association's Fire Prevention Week is Cooking Safety Starts With You. It seems that a lot of people use smoke alarms as a timer for their kitchen, right? So I know that's how I was raised. My mother still does that to this day. But that smoke alarm is not in her kitchen. It is in the hallway outside the kitchen, and it seems to let her know that everything's ready to eat. So
she heard me.
Do not use them that way. No, so Tennille, you're right. The smoke alarms are recommended suggestion for smoke alarms are inside each bedroom, in your hallway, and in the common areas, minus your kitchen, minus your bathroom. So that's really where they're recommended. Now, over the last, I don't know, well, just in my career, over 20 years, smoke alarm technology has changed a lot. So we used to tell you twice a year when the clocks change to change the batteries in your smoke alarms. Well, there's still some of those alarms that are out there that have to have basically a 9-volt battery. Most of those are 9-volt batteries that need to be changed those twice a year. You should be testing your smoke alarms monthly, regardless of what kind you've got. But technology has changed, and now they've got these 10-year batteries. So a lot of the stores that are in your area, they carry those. They're an internal sealed battery, so you can't replace those, and they're good for 10 years. So the thing with that is you need to check the back of your smoke alarm and see what the born-on date is. That's what I call it. See when that was manufactured, and then 10 years from that date needs to be replaced. Sometimes a little sooner, but generally speaking, 10 years. So those are really the kind of two that are out there now. You can also find smoke alarms that have carbon monoxide detectors, so they're a dual type of alarm that are out there as well. There's different types of smoke alarms, and yet again, reach out to your local fire department. And they can help you with those type of smoke alarms to know which ones to place where. But generally speaking, an issue that we kind of run across is that we'll get a phone call and a resident will say, "Hey, my smoke alarm's making this beeping noise." So we'll go out there, we'll find that, you know, whichever type of smoke alarm it is. But what we found is the batteries are okay. It's just that the dust particles can get in there in the sensor and sense that there's a problem. So that's why it'll make a noise. So yes, don't be desensitized to that sound. If it goes off, there's a problem, and it's telling you that there's a reason that it's going off. So get that checked.
Well, I truly thought that was a rumor. I'm glad to clear that up. So we don't need to put it right in the middle of the kitchen, Sarah.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've never really thought about that before.
Yeah, and the bathroom, remember that too, because it's the steam coming out of the shower or off the sink that'll settle down as well.
You know, when we redid our house a couple years ago, now that you're saying that, like, we didn't have a smoke alarm in every bedroom, and we do now.
So, and then another thing, just add that to that, talking about changes, in new construction, a lot of your building code, fire code will dictate that you've got to have wired in, hardwired smoke alarms. So the benefit of that is they actually have power to them. They'll have a backup battery in them, but they're powered through the power of your house. And when one goes off, they all go off. So instead of say you do have an incident and say a fire for whatever reason were to start, let's just say in a bedroom area down a hallway. And if you were on the other side of the home, all of those would go off if you had the hardwired.
Fancy.
Yeah.
Wow.
Kind of gives you that, hey, there is a problem. We've got to get out wherever we are. Yes.
Jeremy,
yeah, I think that's great.
I have to ask you this question. So do you just get super excited when you know that Fire Prevention Awareness Week is like coming? I mean, do you like get it in your mind and like gear up for this week? Is this the week you live for all year long?
So we kind of not just live for the week. We live for the month. We like to spread the message throughout the year, but yes, you're correct. I can speak for myself. I know the guys that I work with here at our department, we do look forward for the entire month. And I'll tell you why, because it gives us the opportunity to get out into our school systems and we get to visit the kids. So we get to spread that message of fire prevention. And it's also fun because we do utilize the National Fire Protection Association's mascot. You've probably heard of him. His name is Sparky. It's Sparky the Fire Dalmatian Dog. Sparky's been around for a long time. And the kids seem to resonate with Sparky. And the best part of that is we get to go out, share that with the children. And they go home and they talk to mom and dad or grandparents or guardians, whoever that may be. But they get to go home and share that message. So every year they're coming home and they're kind of telling them something different, but it's all really the same, right? So fire prevention in general. So it's neat to see of how that can actually resonate in your community. And you can see the fire, the amount of fires or the particular type of fires, you can see them decrease over time.
Well, that's really awesome. And I'm glad that we're maybe helping y'all spread the word a little. I'd like to ask one more question before we wrap up. And you just kind of alluded to this as you talk to kids about it. How would you tell our listeners, like, if you could give them one thing to say about pre-planning at home, like having a plan, what would you tell them, the importance of that, and maybe a tip or two on how to execute a fire plan in your home?
Yeah, great question, Sarah. So one of the things that we try to do while we're educating the kids is put that piece in there to let them know that once it's too big or you know, fire's detected, that you need to get out, right? Wherever you are, you need to get out the fastest way you can get out. And we want you to leave your house or the business or hotel or wherever you are and go to a safe meeting place, right? Because, so Sarah, let's just take your house. If you're in the front part of your house, and Tennille and I are over visiting and we're in the kitchen and we're in a separate part of the house and smoke alarm were to go off, and you may go out one door and Tennille and I may go out the other, but we're going to try to find each other, right, to make sure everybody's out of that house.
Right.
So we just try to share with the kids and share with your listeners that get out of the house, have a safe meeting place where you all know where to go. You can do that by just talking about it with your family. If you're in your home, you can draw pictures of the floor plan or the layout of your house and say, if you were here, go out this door or go out this door to the fastest, safest way out. What if you encountered something at this door? Could you go out this window? Those type things. Talk it through with your family and your friends, wherever you live, and make that a priority to know that, hey, if something were to happen, especially with your family and your residents, right? We're probably the most vulnerable at night when we're all asleep, right?
Right.
So, you know, something shockingly happens and you've got to get out quick. You know, can I get down the hall to get my kids? Or, you know, do they know they can go out a window or go out this door or wherever it may be, but we all meet up at this location. So, yeah, that's very important.
Lots to think about today. And Jeremy, we sure do appreciate you joining us and helping us with all of these tips. Sarah, we got a lot to think about today in terms of fire safety.
We do. And I was reminded just of things that I do every day that I need to make sure, you know, when I'm pouring my morning coffee, I really need to pay a little bit more attention to it.
Yes, it's Fire Prevention Awareness Week right now. So everybody get a plan, check those smoke detectors, and make sure that you are doing what you can to keep your family safe. Thanks again, Jeremy.
Thank you, ladies, for having us. We appreciate you.
Thank you all for listening. In the words of Bob Marley, live the life you love.
And love the life you live.
Take care, everybody.